is a burning thing.
All right, folks, what's good? We are back. Eternat, l'immortal Eternat. What's going on, folks? Welcome to episode number 193 of the Calcio Podcast. Sam Adamo coming at you. All right, so we're a Wednesday podcast now. This will be out Wednesday, the 9th of November, and henceforth, that's what we're going to do. We're going to release podcasts on Wednesdays weekly, once a week. Anything you get more than that is going to be bonus. You can expect one a week every day of the week on Wednesday. Yeah, that's how we're doing it now going forward. It's better. It's better for everyone involved. So it's good to be back. Matt, we're going to have to shift focus a little bit here to the World Cup and almost have to like shift our tone given what's going to be going on in a couple of weeks now for the next month. And fuck, it's actually coming up in less than 2 weeks. It's coming up in like 10 days. So now let's just get this out of the way, okay, right out the gate. We're not in the World Cup. It fucking sucks, okay? It's tragic. Not just for the fact that we have a good team and that we're losing out on the opportunity to take part in a World Cup. And benefit from the positive social vibe that comes with it. It's tragic because this podcast, which is 4 years old, 4.5 years old, it'll be 5 years old in the winter, okay, has never covered the Azzurri at a World Cup. Never. And the Euro was very good for us last year, and we're not going to get that. So all you people who are telling your friends, listen to this podcast, this guy's great, he's crazy, but he's great. There's now less of an excuse for you to guide people in the direction of this pod. And that makes me as sad as it makes you. But we're still going to have fun. We're probably going to be less of an Italian football pod during that month because it's going to be the only football that's going on. And I think you guys will allow me that transgression because sometimes this isn't even a football podcast at all. It's just an Italian pod, or it's just a pod about whatever the hell is going on in the brain of this Italian person. So we may venture into some of the shit going on. It may skew a little heavy toward Canada. Maybe it'll skew a little heavy toward England and the US and the other places that people on the pod listen. But frankly, we're going to talk about all the shit that's going on in the World Cup, I would think, as it's happening, because it'll probably consume the entire world. Have you guys seen the accommodation in Qatar that people have to stay at? It is fucking straight fire fest. They're literally staying in shipping containers. I once saw advertisement to buy a home for $10,000, and it's basically, it's not even a trailer park home, it's not even a trailer, it's like a bin, it's like a bedroom with thin walls that they'll erect on like bricks, like a couple of, or like cement blocks. They'll prop this house up over grass on a couple of cement blocks. It's got no heating, obviously. It exists. You could live a very minimalist life if you want to, okay? Particularly, listen, if you live in like, if you live in fucking like Arkansas or something where I don't think it ever gets that cold, or whatever. Probably gets cold in Arkansas. I don't goddamn know. Mississippi, you're good, you know? Fucking falls to like maybe, falls to 8 degrees one night. That's about as bad as it's going to get, you know? I'll convert that for you guys. What is it? 8 times 2. Plus 30, it's like 48 degrees. I think that's what that is, Fahrenheit, for the Yanks. So, anyway, that's where they're staying in Qatar. People are paying $200 a night to stay in. I mean, it kind of looks like a monastery. The inside of the rooms look like a monastery with two beds. The difference is, in a monastery or in a jail cell, you have like a space to yourself. You ever seen like where Jeffrey Epstein was kept, or like where Al Capone was kept at Alcatraz, like his jail cell, right? Where they've got like the metal shitter in the corner, and they've got a bed, and they've got a sink, and that's about it. But it's his. It's his own domain. They don't even have that in Qatar. People who are staying there aren't even granted that privilege. and I don't know if this is all the accommodations. I'm sure there are some fine establishments in Doha built on the bones of Indian slave labor, where sheikhs have gone to enjoy, you know, probably very haram things, if I had to guess, where they have every luxury, blah, 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 every luxury in the world, every fucking opportunity to, access any vice. I'm sure they exist. But that's not what you and me are getting if we go to the World Cup. You're staying in a fucking yellow shipping container. I'm telling you, it literally looks like... I remember when I was in high school, we went to a retreat this one time. I went to a Catholic all-boys Jesuit high school. And I got out of there without any sexual molestation claims being levied against the school ever that I know of. Imagine that. There was another all-boys school in the city called Selwyn House where... I mean, kids who went there were being taught in a secular environment, not a Catholic one. And there were allegations of foul play there. Imagine that. And we actually took that as a point of big pride. Great pride. And anyway, we went on a retreat this one time in grade 11, which is the last grade in high school in Quebec because we're weird. And it was at like a retreat facility that used to be kind of like a... Christ, I mean, they called it a villa. Villa St. Martin, I think. But it was effectively like... It certainly felt like it might have been a monastery at some point. I felt like a monk, you know what I mean? Like cement floors, really old duvet and linens and very simple rough towel, you know? It felt like kind of what like a luxurious prison might have felt like in the 1700s in France, you know? When Les Misérables is going on. I love how I said St. Martin, now I'm saying Les Misérables. You know, I'm choosing to selectively pronounce shit in French. I do that sometimes with names that don't even, like, need to have French mustard put on it. But like mustard, like tang, like emphasis. Not French mustard, Dijon mustard. You get what I'm saying. Like Kingsley Coman. I think it's an African name. I think Coman, I think his parents are from somewhere in Africa. I don't know if it's Guinea-Bissau or something. I don't know. But Kingsley Coman. Like I'll do that. I'll do that because I'm a douche. But yeah, like, you know, if Italy had qualified for the World Cup, I might have had a good mind to try to go. And, you know, it's a real shame that I didn't because that, you imagine the fucking content of like trying to record a podcast in a shipping container with the thinnest walls ever. And I'm just waking up like fans from, you know, other nations, like two residence is down and it like starts a civil war within the you know within the commune you know, just like I'm fucking ranting about Italy and how Belgium are fucking scumbags and some Belgian guy just comes in and whips me with a fucking waffle. It starts an all-out war. Yeah, look, I am excited for the World Cup. Fuck it man, you know. Hey, like I like what Jurgen Klopp said the other day. He basically just shrugged and said, what are you going to do? You know, it's in fucking December. It's in November. It sucks. What are you going to do? What are you going to do? We had time to do something about it. We collectively, the football community, more particularly you guys, the journalists, this is him saying this, had a chance to, you know, call out FIFA at the time. None of you did. You waited until Sepp Blatter got impeached or whatever the term is. And that was when we decided to cast judgment over them after it was too late and after people had already begun dying, you know, in the process of building the infrastructure for that stadium. But, you know, like, can we just say, like, in the future, maybe no more World Cups where the weather of the place doesn't allow for the sport to be played in a safe environment without a serious health hazard. You know what I mean? Let's start with that, you know? Maybe next time we don't put it somewhere that has no infrastructure, you know? Not just football infrastructure, but the ability to accommodate people, right? Is that fair? 32 teams in a country the size of a city? Sure. Why not, you know? How big is Qatar? What's the square footage of Qatar? Square footage of the area of Qatar? Let me look this up. Fucking producer Sasa. I'm gonna call over the fucking Napolitan producer Sasa. Wait, Sasa. Quanti chilometri il Qatar? L'aria Qatar. Fammi sapere, Sasa. Okay. Ci penso io. So Sasa is looking the landmass of Qatar. Official language Arabic. Ethnic groups 36% South Asian. That's a lot of That's a lot of labor. That's a lot of labor imported. Fucking like that number's gone up like fucking tenfold in the last 10 years, probably. It was definitely not that high in 2009. Let's see. So, okay. 11,000 square kilometers. What's the area of Montreal? Let's compare that. Let's compare that. The area of the Montreal metropolitan area, or just the island of Montreal. Sure. Let's start with that. Get the fuck out of here. There's no way that's right. Okay, no, God, Denver. I thought it said 431,000 kilometers. Okay, hang on. It says 431 kilometers squared is the area of Montreal. Now, the urban agglomeration of Montreal, which includes it in its entirety. Well, who gives a fuck? Listen. Well, okay, I'm not making the point I thought I was going to make. I thought I was going to fucking... I literally thought Qatar was the size of the city that I live in. That was kind of... It was probably... Yeah, it was probably a little ambitious on my part. But still, we have... in the province of Quebec, effectively zero stadiums that tomorrow would be ready to host a World Cup. Zero. That's in a province of... is Quebec 8, 10 million people? It's a lot of people. 8 million people. Way more than the population of Qatar. Okay. Population of Qatar is... Qatar have 2.7 million people in the entire country. You understand how crazy it is to ask... And it would be crazy to host a World Cup in Quebec. Just it would be a squeeze for the infrastructure here. And God knows there's a lot of Italian businessmen who have tried to fucking make it easy to build shit over here. Difficult for certain people, but very easy for other people. Namely themselves, okay? But, like, maybe this is... So no more World Cups where there's no more infrastructure, right? Is that fair? They have the bones. They have the bones. You know what I mean? So instead of the fucking bones of, dead slaves. Fair? Then lastly, and this is where Klopp was bang on, to say stop asking the players about this shit. They're only footballers. Let them go play. It's too late now. They're going. Frankly, he could have added, nobody cares. None of them care. A lot of these guys would have... murdered a slave themselves in order to go play at a World Cup because it's a lifelong dream. Some of them would have. Let's not pretend that we all have, that we all have this weird moral high ground now and we pearl clutch. We're not decision makers. We just want to see World Cups, okay? People get up and they work jobs that they don't want to fucking do. And every 4 years, every 2 years, or in the case of Italians, every fucking 12 years, okay? You get to rally around like a tribal cause with people that look like you. It's just a thing that makes you feel good. We don't want to be bored with the politics. People just don't. So Klopp was saying, don't ask the players about anything to do with Qatar. Don't do it. He went on a rant during a Champions League press conference last week, effectively admonishing journalists for their lackadaisical coverage of the issue, and now they kind of shift the focus onto players and say, hey, what say you? Nicolò Barella, he's not at the World Cup, fuck me, right? what say you, fucking Gareth Southgate, coach of England? What say you, Harry Kane, captain of England? Harry Kane can't even give an address on... We shouldn't be listening to Harry Kane speak on any issue. He can barely speak without lisping, you know? Let the man score. That's it, you know? Let the man fucking he doesn't have any deeper thoughts on anything. He doesn't read the Times. He doesn't know. He's a footballer. He's never had to think about anything critically in his life. I mean, if he has, it's surplus to requirement. It's more than is necessary for the job, okay? I don't know why my mic keeps fucking, like, these things cost a fucking arm and a leg. And you guys hearing this? It's fucking flickering in and out. What the Christ is that? But... try to get away from the mic over here. Try to fucking get a little further away. But, like, to be clear, okay? We don't need to hear what footballers have to say about the state of human rights in the state of Qatar. A place which nobody ever thought about until 12 years ago and no one's ever going to think about again, except for when they think back to the tournament this year and what a gong show it was, all right? So... look, maybe third parameter, maybe henceforth, going forward, we don't award World Cups to countries with, you know, human rights records that are going to put our players in an uncomfortable position where they have to answer. And they're the voice of reason, or they're the people that people have to turn to and say, hey, what do you think? So, you know, maybe no more countries where homosexuality is banned. If we as an organization, FIFA, decide that we want to, you know, pretend to care about gay rights. Yeah, maybe, you know. This is uplifting stuff, by the way. This is great. This is great podcasting. This is very uplifting. This is very mean. This is fucking haven't heard from me in like 2.5 weeks. And we're back. Sam Adamo's championing LGBT rights. Who'd have thunk it, you know? Like, and is, you know, it's funny. There's a lot of people that would just hear me speak. Just broadly, like hear a clip cut of me and just assume I'm problematic, right? That's the joke there, guys, okay? I'm not alluding to some fucking person who's going to clip this in 3 years, all right, to get me off of JFL and say, hey, this guy's problematic. This is not me calling back to that time that I made fun of the gays, okay, 3 years ago. No, this is, that's what I mean. I mean that, you know, listen, this white guy who's, you know, who's maybe a little skeptical that, you know, the woke movement isn't being designed to tear us apart from within. Yeah, you know, that's it. But, so, respect and racism, but award World Cups to dictatorships or authoritarian regimes. And, you know, sure, we're willing to look the other way if you guys just don't pretend to care about, you know, human rights. And when has FIFA ever been anything other than just an optical illusion? It is an optical illusion. The entire idea, I remember growing up, I used to think football for the world because, you know, I'm a victim of marketing and I'm a sucker for that as an 8-year-old. Now it's, you know, you realize it's hypocritical. Did anyone watch that FIFA movie? Did anyone watch that movie that was built around the idea of following the founders of FIFA in the 1920s? Or 30s. Do you guys remember that? It was a movie. And it was called... Fuck. Something United... United something? Christ, I don't remember. It was a terrible movie. Apparently it bombed so bad at the theater. Do you think any fucking like nerd just decided they were going to go to that movie because they believed that football can unite? Like, it's very simple. You and I don't have any control over where the World Cup is played. Neither do the players. The reality is that in any situation where people could pad their pockets, they're gonna. That's it. People accept bribes. It's irrational economically not to. To not accept a bribe requires you to think of other ramifications and morality and stuff. The economic rational thing to do in economics is to accept the free money. You take the free money. If someone offers you a bribe and you don't take it, you're not doing your job. Take the free money, all right? You got the fucking, listen, you got the golden ticket, okay? To fucking Willy Wonka's chocolate factory that Charlie lives at. I don't know, I never saw the movie. Is it a book? I don't fucking know. You got a fucking golden ticket to Willy Wonka's chocolate factory. You take the money. It's just what you do, okay? People at FIFA do it. And then when we find out about it, we got a pearl clutch and we got to say, hey, we're offended that you would do this. We're disgusted. We're in disbelief. We got to pretend that we don't believe it. Every organization in sport, in football, which is a free market that has not like one system like the NFL or the NHL because it's a global game, right? Every single sport league and every football association, they've pretty much all at some point been embroiled in some kind of controversy of some kind, right? These guys are match fixing. This guy's accepting bribes. This guy's paying refs off. You know, this guy gave a friendly deal to this agent because he married his cousin. It's how the world works. It's what people do. It's what we do. So let's just accept the Qatar World Cup for what it is, which is a metaphor for our humanity. In that sense, it's the perfect place for us to host the World Cup in 2022. We have no integrity as a society anymore. And in large ways, we haven't for a long time. But you can get away with things now that you may not have been able to in the past because of interconnectedness and because of the ability to operate in a corrupt way on a global scale. You have the ability to speak to people abroad. You have the ability to sell your services to more people. You don't just need to know the local mayor to get shit built. You could do things now with someone in Trinidad if you're in Russia, okay? You could wire somebody money. It's just what it is, okay? It's a perfect representation, or it's a perfect illustration of the way that we operate as a society now. That's why we have a World Cup at Christmas. That's why we have a World Cup in the wintertime. We allowed it to happen. And so sit down and enjoy it, okay? Italy's not in it. Sit down, enjoy it, okay? Pick a side. Now, don't be weird. Don't cheer on a team. But you want to bet on a team and they're your team? That's okay. If you bet on a team, if you gamble on a team, you could get as hyped up for them to win as if it were your own country. Because what you're doing is you're artificially inflating your emotion. Because, you know, if Italy plays a match, I'm just going to feel stuff. I just do. But if Spain's playing a match and I have $1,000 in my account and I bet 1500 on the fucking on the Spanish, I'm jonesing. I'm through the roof, you know? And there was a comic who said that once. I don't remember who the fuck it was. I think he said, "Hey, you really want to feel the thrill? Bet 1000 on the Jets when you have 500 in your account," or some shit like that. But they do that. Artificially inflate. I can't take credit for that joke. I heard it somewhere. I just don't know where. It's one of those things that's like deep in the back of my mind. And I don't like, I almost forgot that I had heard it before. And I just remembered at the last second. We got to do that. Isn't that funny? Like, there's this stuff that we'll say that we think we're thinking in real time, but like we heard it 5 years ago and you just forgot about it, you know? I don't know. Or sometimes like I'll dream something. And I'll think it's brilliant. I'll think it's gold. And I'll wake up and I'll be like, "Oh, that's incoherent. What the fuck?" You know, it happens all the time with stand-up. I've murdered on stage. I've crushed so many times in my dreams with these fucking weird jokes that just I forget or don't make sense when I fucking wake up and remember. Look, I'm all over the map here. You want to gamble on a team? Pick them. That's fine. You know, like it's. Look, I don't know, but you want to have like a team who you just decide you're going to ride because you kind of have a soft spot for them. That's okay. You know, your second country, the place that the place that your family's from and the place that you're born, the place that you live, I should say, the place you were born, right? In my case, it's Canada, right? I'll watch them. I will. I'm excited. I'll be a little nervous because I'm watching a sport. It won't be the same level of like magical spookiness that you get when you watch Italy as a, you know, Italian abroad, but hey, whatever. You know, I like Serbia too, by the way. I like as a country, I've come to respect them a lot. I like the Serbians. I like Filip Kostic. I like Dusan Vlahovic. I want to see them do really well the World Cup. So, you know, and then there's Argentina, right? Who you kind of have to hate when Italy plays them, but like, they're kind of like your little brother, your little cousin. You know what I mean? If you want to go with the team with the most Italians per capita, it's probably Argentina. I haven't decided who my team is yet in this World Cup. It's probably Canada, but it's one of those weird things where it's like, I'm just going to ride a team's coattails. Now, if you want to really impress me, just bet on like Denmark all the time, or a country that you have no ties to, and then just ride them all the way through. And kind of like how when you manage a team on Football Manager, you develop like an affinity for the club and for the players, and then you watch them in real life and you're like, "Hey, that's cool. That guy who did really well for me, I like him. I want to get his autograph. I want to get a picture with him." Or if I meet him, I'm going to say, "You banged him in for me on FM 10 years ago," whatever. That's cool. So you really want to gain my respect, pick like a team like fucking Denmark or Costa Rica and just ride them out. Ride them out, say, "They're my team, I'm betting on them every fucking round, and we're going to see." You almost make it like a bracket system where you bet on them to win every game, and then if Denmark make it out of the group, you fucking bet on them again, you bet on them again. And then all of a sudden, the team you've been betting on every game in the semifinal who haven't let you down, like, they're there. That's cool, you know? Wales, Denmark, Costa Rica, Saudi Arabia, fucking Qatar. Man, bet on Qatar, that'd be fun. Like, you probably get some crazy margins there. Crazy lines, you know, maybe they'll... Here's the thing, I would be inclined to say that the home team always has an advantage at a World Cup, but the problem is Qatar's not a real country. You know, like, nobody's patriotic about being Qatari. People are Qatari by accident, probably. You know, people move there. Most of the people there are Southeast Indian, it seems. Almost as many people that are from Pakistan and India and Qatar are Arab, according to Wikipedia, which, you know, I was on the page 10 fucking minutes ago. So, you know, whatever. Who knows? Who the fuck knows? Let's see. Let's see what the hell happens in the World Cup. It'll be interesting to see just who bombs. You know, England will probably shit the bed. It looks like France are poised to maybe shit the bed too. Guys, apparently Paul Pogba might retire from football altogether. Isn't this great? Juve have, and we're gonna make this about Juve now because it's what we do. You know, it's what I do. And you know, bear with me. You know, fuck you. We won the Derby d'Italia. I'm allowed to talk about it this weekend. Fuck. Or this, you know, this week. We won it at the weekend. We're talking about it this week. Okay, breathe. Juve. Guys. Look. If you're Juventino, listen closely. If you're not, listen closely because you're going to like what I'm going to say here, okay? And if you're a Juve fan, then this is a cautionary note, okay? I think we might be fucked. Now, I know that's not going to be a popular thing to say the week after you won a big game, okay? As my dog barks and loses his fucking mind in the background. I'm trying to remember that I appreciate him. My friends lost their dog, 12 years old. My dog's 11. My friends lost their 12-year-old dog today. He's a big boy. Big boys die first. Mine's a small dog. That's why he barks. And we have him for many more years, God willing. But fuck, is he annoying. Can you keep Max quiet, please? This is where people tune out of the pod. This is where I lose you. This is where you decide to go listen to Rogan or Shane Gillis or something. And I don't blame you because I'm fucking down here in my basement. Hey, Mom, we got chicken or what? You know, like, I get it. I'm a fucking loser. What are you going to do? Fuck. It is what it is. I got opinions. Listen to me. Fuck. I got opinions too. Fucking 25 in the basement. I got opinions, baby. I'm fucking... and there's no signs of leaving. I fucking feng shuied my bedroom. It's now ready to be... It's ready to be fucking... You know, my parents are sending me a sign too. They're like, hey, listen, when you move out, you know, this will be a guest room. In the meantime, you can sleep there. It's a bit more of an adult room. I'm like, yeah, that's probably a good call. I got a soccer scarf on the wall from Lanciano Abruzzo. So that's maybe we should kind of, you know, start to phase this out for what comes next, you know. Hopefully real soon, you know. But yeah, anyway, you know, I gotta just stay here till the dog dies, I think. My buddy who lost his 12-year-old family dog today, he's living in Boston. You know, it sucks. Dog's dead. His fucking sister's in Toronto. The dog's dead in Montreal. What are you gonna do? You gotta stay. You gotta wait till... You can't move on. You can't fucking move on until, you know, the chickens have come home to roost. It's like you're a parent. You can't downsize and sell your house and start traveling the world until you've become empty nesters. You know, you can't leave your house in good faith while your dog is still alive, right? Is that how it works? Is that how we want to spin zone it? I need someone here to rant to, like Berlusconi needs vagina and ass. It's actually a crime. I'm not gonna pay for one, but it's a crime that a pod of this level doesn't have someone to share takes with and experience with you guys live in real time. Excuse me. That may be a consideration for the future. Guys, Juve are fucked. They're screwed. I think Paul Pogba's done. I think he's retiring. Apparently, he confided in a friend that it's over. He wanted to come back for the World Cup. It's done. Ain't happening. Di Maria's gone. The reason I say this is because both guys have been injured for most of the year, okay? And I think it's been a big reason why we've not been able to deliver at the level that we've felt is you know, desired. I think it's because guys like Pogba have been absent from our midfield, and you go into the season anticipating having him, and all of a sudden you think, you know what, like, our midfield looks a lot fucking better than it does, and now you got to rely on young kids, and like, I just think we have to get used to it. I think it's going to be the tune for the rest of the year. I would be shocked if Paul Pogba plays before the spring. Apparently he should have got operated. He's not, like, bro, it does not look that promising. And look, it's great. I get it. Nicolo Fagioli scores a goal. Young kid, 21, Italian. We love to see it. 2 weeks in a row, he scores a goal against, you know, he scores against Inter at the weekend. You think, oh, the next Claudio Marchisio. Yeah, maybe. But, you know, we still are in a position where I think it's very delicate. It's very delicate still. I think a lot of people, you know, you're a tie against Cremonese away from everyone saying, all right, get the coach out. It's like, guys, we need to realize this, okay? Now, this applies to all football fans. I want you guys to all fucking really pay close attention to what I'm going to share with you here, because this is very relevant and very important. Okay, so it was the case with Milan, sticking it out with Pioli, when there was talk that they might get Ralph Ragnick in, it might have been, now listen, I know results weren't there at the time. Team wasn't very good, but it might have even been the case with Pippo Inzaghi. You stick it out with a guy and you never know what the hell happens. It could go very bad or very well. It's pretty binary, right? With a coach, if you ride a coach out forever, if you decide to ride him out for 4 years, you know, without really keeping him in check, kind of like Arsenal have done with Mikel Arteta, it will bite you in the ass, or it, you know, eventually the trust that you've instilled in the guy is going to pay off. One of two things is going to happen, okay? And there are ups and downs with, like, every coach, pretty much, in a season. When you're on a down, you generally don't want to get rid of him just because it's a big fucking change. You change your coach. The way the ship is run is different. Players have to relearn stuff. Now, I tell you this because I don't think that we've seen the last of the Allegri out trending thing on Twitter. It's going to happen again. And again, things are looking pretty good right now. Inter fans are upset. I understand that, you know. Inzaghi comes out. Simone Inzaghi comes out. Not to be confused with people who I just alluded to. Simone Inzaghi, the coach of Inter, comes out and says, well, Juve got 3 shots on target. One of them hit the post. They scored 2. You know, we got like 9 shots and we didn't score. It's just one of those nights. It's like, well, that's a bad... Yeah, what fucking game did you watch, bro? I get it. Okay, fans are upset. You don't like it. But hear me out. When you get rid of a coach, you have to kind of just rewrite the entire playbook, and that... Yeah, what you're doing is... When you hire the new coach, you don't know if you're going to kind of ride this out and see what happens. And, you know, whether he sticks around is going to be contingent on performance, or is he going to be a long-term guy? So let me give you an example. When you bring Antonio Conte in to coach you, you think long-term guy, even though he's a weird example because he doesn't often stick around for like 5 years. He leaves after a couple. But generally, you bring in Conte, he's the solution, okay? You bring in Mourinho, he's your guy. Now, this sounds intuitive, and any guy that wins the job, okay, through the interview process, of course, he's your guy. I get it. He's management's guy. But I think sometimes management of a given club might hire a coach with a little bit more of a grain of salt. You know, they're like, hey, let's see what happens. Yeah, you know, maybe this will work, maybe this won't. I think when Allegri was brought in at Juve, there was an understanding that it had to work with him. And if it doesn't work, fuck it. You gotta jam the square peg into the round hole. It's just what you gotta do. Because you know what? The sunk cost is too fucking large. And at this point, it's like, hey, you gotta kinda give the guy a little bit of the slack that he's asking for. You know? And it's caused a civil war within Juve's management. And Pavel Nedved, apparently at times this year, has been very upset and has wanted to get rid of Allegri. And Agnelli said, nope, he's our guy. And he said so to the board. And you have to stave off the backlash. And you have to be resilient and be brave and fucking see it through. And then it either works and you look like a genius or it doesn't. And it takes you down with you. So, or it takes you down with him. Okay? So, they're in it together right now is what I'm saying. Okay, they're fucking stuck together, okay? Like Hillary and Bill, all right? Hillary and Bill did a lot of fucked up things together. We know that, all right? And then when Bill gets his dick sucked in the Oval Office and comes on Monica Lewinsky's blouse and there's evidence of it, you know, Hillary's got to say, hey, you know, I don't know. There's 2 sides to every story. Who the fuck knows what happens? Because she has to. She goes down with him. They've done things together that you can't unsee and you can't undo. It's just what it is. They're rogue, okay? Bonnie and Clyde, Allegri and Agnelli, they're locked in till the end of the season. Stop calling for his firing. I'm not even gonna entertain that anymore. It's so insane to even... I'm realizing now how insane a prospect it is that we would ever talk about it again. We can't. We won't. They're fucking stuck together, okay? And until Epstein goes down and gets killed, and the last link, okay, the last possible piece of evidence that might have linked Hill and Bill to the crimes is gone. Until that happens, okay? Until, I don't know, until Allegri is proven right, okay? Until fucking, you know, I don't goddamn know. Until they fucking win the title. They win the title this year. They won't, but say they do. You know, he's vindicated. He's vindicated. He was right all along. They're in the clear. Good grace forever, you know? At a certain point, or maybe it's like winning the Champions League, you know? Once he wins the Champions League, he could do no wrong. You know what I mean? Epstein's dead. The last piece of evidence is gone. He could do no wrong now. You know what I mean? I get it. I understand where they're at. Now, I'm not suggesting to you that they're anywhere close to winning the Champions League. But Hill and Bill were in power for a long fucking time before that happened. They killed a lot of people over the course of many decades before Epstein had to go. Okay? So we could be in this for like 5 years. It could be a long fucking road ahead. But I think the guy renews at the end of 3 years. I just think it's how it's going to happen. It's just a hunch I have based on like human behavior and where Agnelli is. His balls are on the line with Allegri's. So that's it. If Allegri goes, Agnelli looks like a jackass. They're sticking it together. It's what's happening. Okay? Now,
Napoli guys are a lot of people think that Napoli can't lose the title. Now, that's insane because Napoli can always bottle a title. We know that. And what happens is because they're the only team in Naples, unlike in Rome where they have Roma and Lazio, or like in Milan where they have Milan and Inter, or fucking Turin where they have Torino and Juve, they only have Napoli and Naples. So everyone on, you know, that team is they're feeling the pressure, you know. They're feeling the pressure of the fucking people because everyone in that goddamn city likes that team. They love that team. And that city is that team. So there's a lot of pressure, and that's why I think they always wind up fucking crumbling. Now, if they can somehow find a way to fuck this up and lose their momentum, which could happen, okay? Listen, they haven't lost a game. They just have to lose a fucking game, okay? Juve could beat them before fucking, you know, before Valentine's Day, and all of a sudden everything looks a little different. You know, who knows, right? I don't know. But my point is, if they somehow find a way to fuck it up, I actually kind of think it might be better for the Church of Maradona. I was thinking about this yesterday, or earlier today. Look, guys, the reason that Maradona is such a mystical figure in Naples is because he won with them and they haven't won since. That's part of my theory, okay? Yeah, he's dead. They canonized him after he died. We've talked about that before on the pod. I talked about that in Naples and in Amalfi a couple months ago. But, like, it's true that I think a large reason for the reverence that they give him is because of the fact that he was the last guy to have won there. Guys, if they win a title, the curse is broken. The magic is gone. Napoli can never, I hate it. Now listen, it pains me to say this, okay? Because if Juve is not going to win, can it just be Napoli, please? Like, I get it. I understand from a neutral standpoint, just let those poor motherfuckers, let them have it, you know? Let them fucking have it. There's a lot of old men in that city who would be very happy. A lot of people who have never seen, a lot of people my age who have never seen them win. Christ, let them win, okay? I get it. I understand why you might think that is a neutral. And, you know, Napoli fans listening to the pod, yes, they're fucking screaming, of course, Jesus, exactly, I've never seen them win. Most of you guys are, you know, in your 20s, 30s, fucking, you barely seen them win if you ever have, right? So I understand that. You can't win. Here's why you can't win. If you win, there's no more magic around the idea of Maradona. I'm sorry, listen, I don't make the rules. It's what it is. They have to keep failing to win. It will add to the mystique. They have to keep losing in tragic ways. Unfortunately, it pains me to say this. I don't want to say this. As a Juve fan, you could distrust me a little. I mean this with every fiber of my being. Unfortunately, they can't do it. They can't win. It can't be them. They have to keep losing. And maybe, like in 2090, when it's the 100-year anniversary of Maradona's last title, and effectively the death of their title chances, right, for a century. That's when they could, that's when you go all in. You know, that's when you max out the credit cards and, you know, you take out a home equity line of credit on the stadium and you say, we're going for broke. We're getting we're getting Cristiano Ronaldo's great grandson. Fair? Is that fair? Can we do that? Like, that's, I think that's what you got to do. You got to, you go for broke in like 50, 60, in like 60 years. In 60 years, you start thinking about it and you set it up for the title run of 2090. That's what you do. It's, it, listen, they cannot win. If they do, it would be bad for business. It would be bad for the narratives. We just cannot fucking have it. I'm realizing that. So I'm very confident now that some kind of divine intervention will occur to restore the balance of that city where they, you know, they look back at the past and that, you know, we don't allow them to live in the present. You know, something to do with like the universe, football gods. We don't allow them to live in the present and experience happy things. We don't. We force them to look retrospectively and say, ah, remember when. That's what we do with Napoli and the city of Naples. And that's when they are at their best. That's when they're at their best. Folks, by the way, so I didn't really share this because it sucked, but I did an interview with the BBC about the state of Juve like 2 weeks ago. Guys, when I tell you, I think I got to boycott these, but I'm so mad that I didn't, and I can say this because they're not going to fucking listen, and if they do, I mean, so they're not going to have me on for a fucking studio appearance anymore where I got to fucking, you know, give political answers about football, right? Like any of this matters. So, but in the future, I think I got to boycott any such interviews unless I decide to like, you know, wear the glasses and shit and lean into the character a bit, lean into the comedy. And it's not a character, it's who I am. But listen, you lean into it a little bit and you're like, hey, at least we had a little fun. I tried doing it. Guys, they edit the fuck out of everything. They edit it. I made the, you know, the host crack, break character, laugh, edited it out, right? They don't want to hear that shit. So it's a terrible interview. And I fucking had a red pimple on my nose, right? On fucking, you know, national television in the UK looking like Rudolph in October. So, just listen. The move is to do it live. You go live when you have to kind of, and then you can ambush them, okay? And this is going to get clipped. You can clip this one day when I go, you know, if I go on a fucking morning radio station or something, or a morning fucking TV show. The best part about being live is you get to ambush. So that's gonna be the move going forward. I'm gonna have to, and listen, I'll accept any other invite in the future, but I'm gonna have to fucking develop a better strategy on how to get more of a point across and like almost put them between a rock and a hard place where it's like either, like he didn't give us anything. I gave him a little bit of like political, you know, well thought out, presentable material, and I gave them some, like I threw them a bone, like a little bit of humor to see where it would go, and they rejected the humor. Now, if I go all in with humor, then they have no choice but to air it, or they don't altogether. But at least then I'm kind of like forcing them to pick between who I am and who I'm not. But yeah, I tweeted it out. I don't know if you want to go back in like my tweets. I tweeted it in like my fucking media. There's a link underneath it. You need a VPN in the UK. It fucking sucks. But like, that's how bad the state of things were perceived at Juve after they got knocked out of the Champions League. That this fucking idiot, they turn to him and they're like, well, what the hell do you think we should do? You know? Like, I'm the one who's going to bring the solution. Like, I'm the one who's going to know what the fuck to do. Right? Like, how incredible is that? They're like, hey, listen, we don't know what the fuck is wrong. We don't know what the hell to do. What do you think they should do? We have no fucking clue, you know? People all want to fucking hang him from a bridge like the cartels do with his fucking tongue slit through his throat. You know, things are obviously a little tough at Juve right now. Sam, what say you? What should they do? How do you save this multi-million-dollar corporation? Like, you know, anyway, you know, it's a thing that happened. So look, I want to just kind of address one last thing over here, guys. So Pablo Mari, the center back from Monza, got stabbed last week. He got stabbed, I think, in a mall in Milan, along with a bunch of other people, and he's out indefinitely. And I gotta say, like, something really fucking incredible happened. Like, and I just realized, you guys remember that Monza beat Juve, right? The day that Juve died, right? That whole thing, long, long time ago. I can still remember that, right? Okay. I remember watching Pablo Mari that day and thinking, who the fuck is this guy? I had barely heard about him from his time at Arsenal, and I thought he was incredible. Guys, you know, you fuck with Juve, all right? We're going to put a fucking Moji hit job on you. That's what that is, all right? That's a fucking vendetta. That's a fucking message to the league. You fucking come out, you play well against us, it's over. You know what I mean? They're not fucking around anymore. That's what that is. And look what happened. They fucking won the derby. They fucking had a guy stabbed. They put a hit out on the cocksucker, and they fucking won a derby. It's what it is, all right? It's what the fuck's going on right now. Or, you know, alternatively, maybe it was Armando Izzo. He fucking put on, you know, he put on a brave face, and he's like, hey, listen, man, you're my buddy. I really appreciate, you know, our relationship. Fucking, he's posting about it like, un abbraccio forte, gumba. But, you know, that might have been a Scampia job. You know what I'm saying? They play the same position. The fuck knows, you know? Itzo's like, Jesus Christ, I'm playing for fucking Silvio Berlusconi right now. I fucking bounced around. I wasn't even getting playing time at Torino anymore. Sam Adamo on the Calcio podcast was fucking lobbying for me to get in with the Italian national team. I got a couple caps, and now I'm on the fringes at Monza? Well, you got to step up. You know what I mean? He's done some shit in the shadows before, allegedly. Allegedly. I mean, he was found guilty of it, but he still denies, right, the match-fixing thing, and his brother, his gumpa, whatever, he knew this guy who was fucking this, you know, this guy's paisan, who, you know, someone's cousin who fucking, you know, was involved with these people, and hey, you know, maybe fucking, you know, just let a goal in with Abelino, 21-year-old Armando Izzo, what's it to you, you know, hey, it's, whatever, fuck knows, you know, maybe someone owed him a favor, I don't know, but, what I love the most about this was Andrea Pitanga. Okay, I have to compose myself. So Andrea, okay. So Andrea Pitanga, the striker at Monza. I saw this live in real time. I saw him tweet out. I saw him post on his Instagram story. I should say this was on Instagram, not on Twitter. He posted on his Instagram story, and this is where I found out about what happened. He posted an Instagram story of Pablo Mari after he'd gotten stabbed. And they're like hugging each other. And he wrote something along the lines of like fucking coraggio, bro. You know what I mean? Like I'm with you. We're all with you. A big hug. You know what I mean? And then fucking the next story posted 2 minutes later was him sitting in a restaurant in a fine dining establishment with fine china and with a white tablecloth eating dinner. And I saw a tweet that sent me where some guy goes, Pitanga's literally like, RIP, bro. R.I.P., bro. And then he says, R.I.P., bro. E mo si mangia. R.I.P., bro. All right, bon appetit. Let's go. Like, he has no tact. He has no fucking tact whatsoever. Like, when a guy on your team got stabbed and you're posting about it, maybe don't just show that you're out. Go out. Do it. Go out. You're allowed. But you have to pretend that you're sad, you know? How's he doing? Oh, shit, he got stabbed? How's he doing? He's all right. He's going to play. He's going to play again. His career's not over. All right. Hey, caviar and foie gras, please. Yeah, for the table. All right. E mo si mangia. Let's eat. All right, boys. To Pablo. It's what he would have wanted. Listen, I've only known Pablo for a couple months, but if there's one thing he likes, it's a fucking good order of hors d'oeuvres. All right? That's what he likes. I'm going to do it in his honor. You know what I mean? What if he died? What if Pablo Mari was dead? You think Pitanga would have canceled his dinner plans? Like, he was still, he probably wouldn't have posted the picture because it's a little bit more severe. But he still would, like, you know. I don't know. It's interesting. It's interesting. I like when the veil gets pulled back on, like, PR, you know? I like when the veil gets pulled back on PR. Anyway, guys, we're back. So, again, we're back weekly. We'll be out again next Wednesday. A couple days before the World Cup, so, you know, maybe it'll be a bit of a World Cup preview. We'll look back on some of the shit that happened over the, you know, the week that was. Again, one weekly episode now, guaranteed. That's my promise to you. So we're doing that henceforth. Wednesday, we're a Wednesday pod now. So, you know, enjoy. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for your patience. Appreciate you still tuning in, you know, despite the little two-week hiatus. And I love you all. If you're new to the show, Calcio Podcast is the handle on Instagram, Twitter, TikTok. Follow us at that handle everywhere. And subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify. Rate us 5 stars wherever you are. It helps us out, whatever podcast platform you're on. Helps us out if you give us a rating and subscribe. So enjoy the outro. Enjoy your weeks. And alla prossima. We'll catch you soon. That's all for this week. Ciao.
Love is a burning thing. And it makes a fiery ring, bound by wild desire. I fell into a ring of fire. I fell into a burning ring of fire. I went down, 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 and the flames went higher. And it burns, 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 the ring of fire.